to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk, episode 441, to be broadcast on Wednesday, May 14th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can just comment right down here below, or you can drop me an email if you're listening to an audio file, and that would be at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. I am coming back from spin class this morning, and I'm listening to public radio. And while I'm listening to public radio, what do I hear? Hartford may remove bike lanes. Really? So you can park more cars? Did I say this already? Really? Hartford may hit the brake on bike lanes. Cyclists are in an uproar. And this was on Connecticut Public Radio. It was a story by Mason Kahn. And I am going to talk about that more in the show. And cyclist launches class action suit for bogus NYPD red traffic light tickets. The NYPD keeps ignoring a law that allows cyclists to pass through a red light on the walk sign. Now someone is making a federal case out of it. More on that when we get into the show. All sorts of things going on. People hate bikes. I just can't stand it. I love bikes. I love talking about bikes, and that's why we have Bicycle Talk. On a positive side, it's May and it's Bike Month. It's still May. It's still Bike Month. So yeah, it's still going on. Yes, that's a League of American Bicyclists thing, and they've been doing this for a very long time, which I have spoken about in the past on the show. There's more things coming up real soon. And it's the Giro. The Giro d'Italia started last Friday. Yeah, all right. Fun stuff, huh? Started in Albania this year, making it a rather interesting start. And I've got some things to talk about that too later in the show. So we'll get to that in a bit. Today is a rest day for the Giro. Because actually what it's a transportation day too. Because they started in Albania, if you don't know where Albania is, I'll tell you where it is. It is right across the Adriatic, really far down, like by the heel of the boot, if you're looking at Italy, and you know how Italy's shaped like a giant boot. So it's down by the heel. And just below Croatia and Serbia's out there. There's all sorts of countries out there. But anyway, they did start in Albania this year, and the first three stages were in Albania. Also on a positive side, happy Mother's Day, a day or two late, you know, but, you know, I had to mention happy Mother's Day, and I have a little piece here that I will bring out a little later in the show, and it was all about my mother rode a bike. Not my mother, someone else's mother, but my mother didn't have anything to do with bicycles. I don't know if she ever sat on a bicycle seat. Not really sure about that. So we'll do a little Mother's Day thing in there because it's kind of cool. And I found it and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing to bring out. On the Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip for the Week. Hang on tight. This one comes from the Giro. And it also brings me a reminder of things that have happened in the past with me on a bicycle. If you spend enough time on a bicycle, things can happen. Lots of interesting things can happen. You never know what you're going to see. You never know what's going to get thrown out in front of you. You never know what kind of encounter you're going to have. And I'm going to say Ron's tip for the week is watch out for animals that you don't expect. Yeah, that's right. I've hit dogs. My friend Pat hit a chicken. My friend Scott hit a chicken. Both of them went down when hitting the chicken. Pat not in such a good way. My friend Scott got up and just kind of laughed. But, you know, you just don't know what's going to scoot out in front of you when you're riding your bike down the road. So it's really, really important to keep your eyes and your wits about you as far as that goes. And why am I mentioning this? Because Giro d'Italia rider was almost wiped out by, hang on, a goat. Yeah, Albania's great. Just watch out for the goats. Yeah, Dion Smith of Intermarché Wanty confirmed that it was the first time that a goat had tried to knock him off his bike. He's fine. He avoided it. He was able to scoot around it, but this goat just came leaping across the road. It was really funny. I mean, it's funny as long as you don't hit them. When you hit them, it's not so much fun because, you know, a goat's a sizable enough animal to create a bit of a problem. And, you know, you can go down pretty hard. When I hit the dog that I hit many, many years ago, it launched me right off my bike. I was going down a hill at a pretty good clip, and dog came out from someone's yard. And there were a lot of bushes on the edge of the road, kind of like they had their own kind of natural fence there. And this dog just shot out behind the bushes. I never saw it until it was in my front wheel. And then over the handlebars you go, and, you know, I knocked the dog out. And it was Easter Sunday, and I was late for Easter dinner. Sorry, Mom. Back to Mom's and Mom's Day and all that, long time ago. Anyway, I got a lovely little bus ride back into Willimantic, and you know, you got to watch out for the goats, you got to watch out for the dogs, you got to watch out for all the animals out there. They can be really, really dangerous. So yeah, there's obstacles out there that you want to avoid, and never underestimate the size of the animal you're hitting. Yeah, a chicken can take you out. A chicken. Can you imagine a chicken? Yeah. So my tip of the week is keep your eyes open for everything out there. Just when you think all you're having to deal with is, you know, cars and trucks and other craziness along the road when you're out riding, you got to watch out for small animals too. And big ones. Watch out for big ones. I almost hit a deer once. Actually, I brushed the deer. The deer and I both had to go home and clean our shorts after that one. But anyway, that's a little scary, especially when you're really bearing down on them fast and there's no way to get out of the situation or change your line, or you can't really hit the brakes because that's just going to cause a problem. So, you know, I've been lucky. I've been real lucky. I got to say, I have been real lucky. And, you know, the worst animal I've ever hit that has taken me down is a human being. That's what it is. So anyway, let's move on to some content here and get involved in here. So let's go back to this this NPR story I heard this morning. I'm just taken aback by this. I can't believe that this sort of thing happens. So the story is Hartford may hit the brakes on bike lanes. Cyclists are in an uproar. Obviously, we're in an uproar. What a silly thing. Why would you take away bike lanes? Hartford got $160,000 in state funding last year to support a citywide trail system that could include new bikeways and walkways connecting parks to the riverfront and downtown area. Bike lanes or more parking spots? The debate has been a flashpoint in some densely populated cities. Didn't I mention a few weeks back about how there's more parking lots than spaces than there are cars in this country? Odd, isn't it? After hearing complaints from some residents and local business owners, the Hartford City Council is weighing a proposal to rethink existing bike lanes in the city, and consider restricting them to provide space for more parking. What are you thinking? Backwards, going backwards. And you know, it's really hard to go backwards on a bicycle. It's even more difficult to go backwards on legislation. Anyway, a resolution introduced in April calls for the city to study cycling infrastructure with special focus on the impact of bike lanes on small businesses. Shop owners have complained that the bike lanes are creating a parking crunch and impeding business, according to a text in the resolution explaining why it was brought forth. Boy, I'll tell you, people who ride bikes in Hartford, find out who those businesses are and do not support them. There's a first start right there. You know, they have to learn. Maybe they have to learn the hard way. 10 bicycles take up the same space as one parallel parking space. Enough said? Okay. Bikers, though, are up in arms. A group of them are planning a ride-in rally to Hartford City Hall on Monday, that was today, during public council comment period to voice their concerns about this resolution. Jay Strange, an active transportation consultant who frequently bikes in Hartford, said the measure is counterproductive. No kidding. He said, bike lanes slow traffic down in the city and make people on the streets safer. When business owners say, hey, I want to choose between a bike lane or a parking space in front of my business, what are they doing? What they are doing is overlooking the opportunity to create a slow, safe, more productive street, Strange said. Under the resolution, the Department of Public Works would be tasked with exploring alternative options. Those could include time-restricted bike lanes or diverting bike traffic to shared-use paths like sidewalks in areas such as downtown Hartford. Don't put bikes on the sidewalk downtown Hartford. Please don't do that. What a bad idea. What business owners are overlooking in this debate is that people who walk or ride bicycles use the bus are customers, Strange said. In 2019, the city created a bike master plan providing a framework for future development. The city has also received public funding to improve pedestrian and bike safety. Hartford got $160,000 in state grant last year to support the citywide trail system that could include new bikeways and walkways. Hartford also facilitated the arrival of 220 electric scooters, partnering with private company and the Capital Region Council of Governments and the initiative. Mayor Arun Arutablam, I don't know how to say his name, Lem Tapan, said in a statement in August that it would not only make it easier for residents to access public transit and navigate the city without a car, but to be a leader in sustainable mobility in Hartford and beyond. Well, yay, Mayor. Mayor A, we're going to call him Mayor A, because he's got quite a last name. Anyway, in 2023, the city received $19 million in federal grant money to improve pedestrian safety on one of the busiest streets in Hartford's North End. Some of that money will go towards bicycle facilities, but the city also quietly clamped down on traffic enforcement. The Hartford Parking Authority stopped ticketing cars illegally parked in bike lanes for a year, its executive officer Jill Turlow said in city budget hearing on April 29th. Turlow added some members of the council told her to do so. Councilwoman Maley Rosado said she made the request after a business owner on Zion Street told her the bike lanes were impeding customers. Well, let me explain something to your owner of business on Zion Street. If, for some reason, you decide to make the sidewalk the proper place to ride the bike so that you can park a car on the street where the bike lane is, guess what? Chaos is going to just be crazy here. Why? Because people are going to be stepping out of stores and a bike is going to come along and there's going to be a big collision. And that's not safe. That's not right. That's not good. That's not good for your customers. What if you start having your customers taken out by people that are riding their bikes on the sidewalk instead of on the street where they belong? Anyway, so as a council member did reach out to Ms. Trullo with a concern, Rosado said during a hearing, not only Zion Street, there are other businesses that are involved and find a better way that works for our small businesses and bike lanes. Councilman John Mitchum said he was troubled by that. We have ordinances, then quietly we make accommodations for our business-owning friends, Mitchum said at the hearing. I'm trying to understand how it was for a year that we suspended a law and the operations of this agency that is before us without any action by this body? Yeah, that's a good question. The council referred to a resolution on bike lanes and to its Planning and Economic Development Housing Committee. Phone and email messages left for some of the council members who introduced the resolution were not returned. If a resolution is adopted, the city staff would need to conduct a study and submit a report after 6 months, providing recommended modifications to existing bike lanes and cost estimates for the work. Can you believe this? Boy, oh boy. So just, hey, Hartford, wake up. Wake up. Don't go backwards. You're finally starting to put some good infrastructure in. You finally have bike lanes that are well marked. You finally have intersections that have green box outs on them. You're moving forward, but to do something like this is just crazy, silly backwards. Someone needs to have a very serious but non-confrontational discussion with the Hartford business people that are concerned about their fact that people can't park their cars there. Maybe people shouldn't be parking their cars there. Maybe they should be encouraging more bike traffic and find out that it relieves the congestion and therefore opens up a lot more space all around. Oh, God. I have a really hard time with the car-centric world that we live in. It really is tough. And you know, I grew up as a car guy. My dad owned a garage. And I was always around cars. But gosh, that was a long, long time ago. And Fran were here, she would have said in a land far, far away. But anyway, it was a long time ago, and things are progressing. Things are finally starting to move forward, and it's really great to see, because riding your bike to go do your to go call on a merchant is so much more pleasant than driving your car, trying to look around and find a parking space. Can't find a parking space anywhere. It's maddening. And, you know, use the garage if you're going to drive your car in. Oh, yeah, the garage costs money. Maybe you don't have to pay on the street. Well, maybe it's time to pay the garage and park your car in the garage. If that's what the way you want to transport yourself in, then pay for it. That's it. You're paying for the car, so pay for the service that you get offered for it. Anyway, that's my first step into the show, fresh off the rant of the week. But also, while we're there, let's talk about the cyclist launching a class action suit for bogus NYPD red light tickets. The NYPD. This is great. When is the NYPD going to learn the law? The police department must stop giving cyclists red light tickets and criminal summons for legally moving through intersections on a pedestrian walk sign and before the traffic light changes to green for cars, according to a new class action lawsuit. The legal challenge in the Southern District of New York City launched on Wednesday asked for a federal judge to issue an injunction against the nation's largest police force and make the city pay damages to any cyclists wrongfully ticketed, detained, or arrested for going with the leading pedestrian interval, or LPI, a law that has been on the books since 2019. That's kind of a cool law. I didn't realize they actually even had that there. So if the light is red, but there's a walk signal, if you're on a bike, you can move with the people who are walking. So if they're crossing the street and the traffic is stopped all around, you get to go forward. That's kind of a nice law. That's a nice idea, because it just makes a lot of sense. So the NYPD has continued to give out traffic tickets and more, amping them up to criminal court summons, as Streets Blog has documented. This is from Streets Blog. The other article was from Connecticut Public Radio, by the way. The new case in New York's Southern District aims to achieve what previous lower-level lawsuits have not, forced the NYPD brass and the rank and file to follow the law by giving out clear guidance and training while tracking future red light tickets, according to the attorneys behind the suit. The city should also compensate people who have gotten phony tickets and criminal court summons, the suit argues. The action seeks to ensure that the NYPD finally follows the law as it has been written for years and stops unlawfully detaining and prosecuting cyclists when they've done nothing wrong, said Marianne Wang of the firm Wang Hecker LLP, who filed the action. It's just always going to be a battle, isn't it? This is the way it is. The class action's first plaintiff was Oliver Casey Esperanza. He got a ticket while commuting to work when a cop stopped him for going through an intersection at 3rd Avenue and East 42nd Street in Midtown on October 1st. And Esperanza rode with an advance walk light before Officer Kenny Verga pulled him over and telling him he illegally rode through a red light. When the cyclist explained that it was legal to ride through with a walk sign, the less than finest allegedly said he was 99% sure Esperanza was wrong about that before giving him a $190 ticket. The cyclist took the case to court and the judge, who was 100% sure, tossed it last month. Rather than make cyclists go to trial each time the NYPD discards the six-year-old law, Manhattanite and his attorneys filed a class action suit to achieve a verdict with more teeth to prevent cops from continuing the practice, especially now that the finest are issuing summons to force people to criminal court or to face an arrest warrant, including cyclists going through the walkway with the walk. It's even more of a reason why people should join this class action suit. They're enforcing laws without really knowing what the law is. This is not unusual to me. I have had very, very reasonable conversations, and I say reasonable because I'm very diplomatic about it, with law enforcement officers, and a lot of them don't know the law. I have to say, it's when I make mention of, did you know that? And I'm talking really, really simple things like the 3-foot law, which has been around for a really, really long time. It's an education process which really, really needs to be upgraded, enforced. I don't know how you do it when you're running an organization like the New York City Police Department, but it seems like there would be some sort of an educational strategy here to teach them about pedestrians and cyclists and why, you know, they're oftentimes right when they oftentimes think they're wrong. So anyway, barely 2 weeks into the NYPD's new strategy of giving cyclists and e-bike riders criminal summons, also known as pink summons, for low-level offenses, cops have already given out at least one pink summons to a cyclist who told StreetsBlog she had been riding with a walk sign. The suit names the city, police commissioner Jessica Tisch, and her 3 predecessors under Mayor Adams, and accuses the officials of knowingly violating New Yorkers' constitutional rights. Ah, boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. So anyway, this goes on and on, and I'm not going to go on and on with it because the New York City Police Department has declined to comment on the pending litigation. If you're going to enforce the law, know the law. Is that simple? I think that's simple. So, you know, just because you drive around in a gigantic behemoth vehicle behind that big glass windshield all darkened up and all, doesn't mean that you're superior over the bicycle. It just doesn't. Doesn't mean you're superior over the pedestrian. It just doesn't. It just means that you are not paying attention. Anyway, we won't even get into the cell phones and not paying attention part of this. But anyway, I'm going to move on. We're going to find something else to talk about here because there's always something else to talk about here on Bicycle Talk as it is related to cycling. And I actually had a little trouble getting it all together here today, which is why I'm on kind of late in the day here with my live presentation. But what happens when you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to teach spin class? Sometimes you get a little sleepy and you fall asleep when you're trying to put together a show. And here I am. Anyway, it happens. So that is it. That kind of covers some of those really, really strange things going on there out in the world. So happy Mother's Day, a day or two late. But okay, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I found this really cool story. This was presented on May 8th, 2025. The author is Kendra Ramsey, and this is from CalBike, so it's a California-based bicycle page. And it goes on to talk about this woman. She talks about her mother, and one of the constants growing up as far back as she could recall was her mother's silver bicycle. It was a well-loved bike from the 70s and black handlebar tape, tan leather toe cages, and a set of panniers. And it still lives in this woman's garage. It holds so many memories that she can't part with. That bike and her mother's dedication to getting around on two wheels in Sacramento before bike lanes were common showed her the usefulness of the bike as the first and last mile solution. Biking got her to and from transit, starting when she was in elementary school and when she and her mom would load their bikes on the bus if the destination was a bit too far for a walk. So growing up car-free, unlike most families, they didn't own a car, and it wasn't new for her mom, who had spent most of her adult life car-free due to a combination of environmentally conscious and financial circumstances. One of the things she says we realize as we get older is that how we are raised becomes our normal. Seeing my mom use her bike to get community college classes and jobs, I always saw the bike as a useful way to get around. In our circles, bikes weren't a recreational activity. They were a lifeline. It required route planning and taking into account whether the route would be safe for a woman by herself, but it's still a lifeline that got us to where we needed to be. So that is a really interesting comment as you listen to that. If you as a parent are presenting cycling as transportation to your kids, there's a very, very good chance that your kids will continue that. Because, you know, kids do, they do what their parents do, whether they want to or not, whether they like to or not, they eventually all fall back to it, and they do what their parents do. So if their parents are, you know, dedicated to using a bicycle for transportation, it's a very good chance that they will adopt that into their lives too as they get older. So it's kind of cool. Tuning into marginalized voices, she says as she got older, she understood why her family didn't own a car when most others did. As a single mom who often worked multiple jobs, they simply couldn't afford it. I also understood the challenges that come with relying on the transit system that only goes to certain places at certain times, and you came to see the bike as the key to the opportunity. Public planning processes often overlook the value of the experienced people like her mom who make things work despite challenges and provide for their families on two wheels. This is one of the reasons why leading CalBike is such a privilege. So this woman is actually part of this organization. I'm grateful to have a platform to uplift the needs of women, caregivers, and others who are not the typical bicyclists and whose needs are often unmet. She's thrilled to be a part of a growing group of diverse leaders in bicycle advocacy, changing the common perception of bike riders as spandex-wearing cisgender men and amplifying the lived experiences of a broader group of people who bike. One of her goals as the executive director of CalBike is to center the voices of bicyclists from all walks of life. We're stronger together than we are alone. While her mom is no longer with us, the vision of her leaning over her drop bars on her road bike remains clear in her mind, and she can only hope that her daughter grows up with the similar but fond memories of a strong mom getting around on a bike. What a nice Mother's Day story. That was great. That's really cool. So, yeah, you know, do it, live it, and your kids will follow through, hopefully. That's the hope, anyway. My son doesn't ride a bike, but that's beside the point. I still think that someday he'll figure it out, but that's only my hope. I can't force it upon him in any way. He's a grown man, and his mode of transportation is primarily walking, and also he uses mass transit because he lives in a big city. He lives in Chicago, so that makes it a great opportunity for him to get around. I would, if I were there, I would certainly be on a bike, because it's, to me, there's just that little bit more independence, that little bit more control of your destination and the time you're going to be there if you're on a bicycle, because the bicycle is, to me, a very simple machine that works really well for transportation. So anyway, that's the happy Mother's Day note for any of you moms out there that are riding bikes and are influencing your kids into riding bikes. I think this is just great. It's a lovely thing, and I would love to give you a major tip of the Pedal and Ron cycling cap for doing that. All right, let's move on to a few other things here. So this is really interesting. I work for or have worked for, it's recently got sold, the Farm to Fork Fondo, that Tyler Wren started that 10 years ago, and then he recently sold the business and the business model to a couple of friends of mine, and now they're doing it, and so they're continuing it in somewhat of a different way, but still continuing doing that. And we have a ride that is, they call it the Pennsylvania Dutch Ride. And it's in Pennsylvania in the middle of Amish country, which is kind of cool because you end up riding along a lot of farmland roads that are, you know, just horse and buggies are everywhere. You do have to be careful about where you ride your bike, because there's certainly a lot of horse poop on the roads, but that's, you're in Amish country, and the beauty of that ride, of course, is that all the rest stops are at these Amish or Mennonite-owned establishments. Well, someone who came out of that area was a guy by the name of Floyd Landis, who is a professional cyclist, and for many years, and he basically, someone recognized that he had a lot of talent on a bicycle, because a lot of the Mennonites get around on bicycles as well as the horse and buggy concept, and he was discovered and therefore became a professional cyclist because he's very, very talented. He, since being I guess he got disbanded from, or disbarred, whatever you want to call it, from cycling, because he got caught up in the whole Lance Armstrong madness. He ended up in a lawsuit with Lance Armstrong, because Lance Armstrong sues everyone. That was his tactic, was to threaten everyone if they in any way tried to expose him for what he was doing, which was cheating really badly. And so he got into a big lawsuit with him, and he won the lawsuit, and then he ended up starting his own company with CBD products, which are for athletic performance. So really cool, because Floyd knew all of the farmers, the Amish farmers, who were always looking for a product that they could grow and sell to keep themselves sustained. And Floyd went back and said, grow hemp for me. Yay, good idea, right? So he gets all of his hemp from the fields in Pennsylvania, in Amish country, which is very, very cool. Anyway, that's a long story, and we're going to move that story forward a little bit. He had a very good friend of his who also got caught up in the whole mess, and his name was Dave Zabritsky. And Dave Zabritsky used to hang out with him, and so I had the opportunity to to hang out and chat with these guys when we had the Farm to Fork Fondos down there. And it was really fun because I'm sitting there with guys that have won stages in the Tour de France. I mean, very, very cool stuff. Just to give you an idea, Zave Dobriskie, he was born on January 12, 1979. He's a retired professional bicycle racer from the United States who competed as a professional between 1999 and 2013. His main strength was individual time trial, and his career highlights include stage wins in 3 Grand Tour stage races, winning the U.S. National Time Trial Championship 7 times. Dobriskie is known for his quirky nature, he's a funny guy, including singing before stages and the interviews he does with fellow riders in the professional peloton, which are posted on his website. In 2005, he became the 3rd American to wear the leader's yellow jersey in the Tour de France after winning the prologue of that year's tour. However, later admissions of drug use during that time caused him to be stripped of his stage win and resulted and the resulting yellow jersey. So on October 10th, 2012, while a member of the Garmin Sharp squad, it was announced by the USADA that he would be suspended for 6 months with admissions of doping during this time with the U.S. Postal cycling team. Remember U.S. Postal? That was one of Armstrong's first big things. Later that day, Dobriskie confirmed that his acceptance of a 6-month ban ended in March 1st of 2013, along with stripping of all race results between 2003 and 2006. So anyway, why am I talking about Dave Dobriskie? I will tell you in just a minute, because Dave has started a new business. Now, understand that if you race a bicycle, there are going to probably be a number of times that you will meet the pavement in a way that is not rubber on the ground. And so you get ejected from your bike often, and yeah, you hit your head often, and sometimes you have concussion issues, and concussions are a really, really big deal. Fortunately, the helmets are getting better, but the sport is not getting any safer. It's just, you know, it's an inherent problem that happens when you race bikes. You're probably going to fall down a few times. I used to tell people, if you're going to race your bike, you're probably going to go down hard at least once a year. And I think that's probably what my average was. And, you know, it just part of the game. That's all I can tell you. It's just part of the game. Hockey players, they lose their teeth. The cyclists, they hit the pavement hard. They get a lot of road rash. They look really beautiful for a long time. By the way, I still know that I have road rash scars on my body that I call them the tattoos of life. So, you know, it's something that happens. But anyway, I wanted to talk about Dave a little bit because I found this really cool thing in Bicycle Retailer. And I am not promoting his product in any way. This is not a promotional product. We don't do this on Bicycle Talk. But if you want to find out more about it, I can tell you where you can go. But there was a great article in Bicycle Retailer that says you can't pedal through a concussion. Dave Dobriskie tried. Now he's helping others to do better. So Dave has, with a partner or a few partners, has actually started a business, which is a supplement style of business there. Actually, I looked them up online just to see what it was all about. And it looks like it's similar to like a goo package, you know, the gel type packages that other companies make. There's a bunch of different companies that make those types of gels. And they have significant supplements in them that help you with concussion care. So kind of cool stuff. I just thought it was a pretty neat thing and just a real nice little success story for him and for you know, for others that may be suffering this, we have a basketball player here on the University of Connecticut campus who has been dealing with concussion protocol for a number of years, and she's back and she's playing again, but she had a really tough time with it. It's the real deal. It's not an easy thing to get through, and it can cause a lot of problems. So anyway, when it comes to empowering athletes, Dave Zabritsky had a long list of teammates in mind, including his Race Across America teammate, Mickey Diamond. On October 9th, 2019, Diamond, a motorsport icon, sustained a traumatic brain injury when he crashed on his bicycle during a training ride in Orange County, California. Even though Diamond was wearing a helmet at the time, he still sustained extensive head trauma and spent 5 days unconscious in the ICU. While Diamond has made tremendous progress with his recovery, he's still dealing with significant symptoms every day. Dave felt Diamond was an obvious choice for the cognitive protocol product development team. For a few weeks, I stopped all my other supplements and focused solely on cognitive protocol. This is what he calls his products. I think that's the name of the company, actually. It's called Cognitive Protocol. I noticed improved focus and better sleep. Before, I slept poorly, and I couldn't tell if I was dreaming or just thinking. Since using the protocol, I've noticed a big difference. I'm sleeping better, dreaming again, and I can focus more during the day. Memories, the thought were lost forever are coming back, and I'm able to remember things and be more present. The protocol is helping to balance things out and allow my mind to feel freer, improving memory, and he feels like it's giving him peace of mind. So Cognitive Protocol was founded by a retired professional cyclist and Olympian, Dave Zabritsky, and wellness innovator, Scott Thompson, born from the necessity to provide meaningful science-based support for concussion recovery and long-term cognitive help. Cognitive Protocol delivers targeted supplements and resources dedicated to cognitive excellence for athletes, performers, and anyone prioritizing brain wellness. And the supplements are now available, marking a significant advancement in how we treat and understand and proactively support cognitive health. So pretty cool stuff. Shout out to Dave. Very cool. I never thought you were going to go in this direction when I saw you hanging out with Floyd all the time. It was fun to talk to those guys, because, you know, when have you had the opportunity to sit down and talk with a former professional cyclist and someone who has raced at that level, which is an absolute dream from a lot of people that, ride bikes. So anyway, yeah, Dave Zabritsky, pretty cool. I'm really psyched for you. Big shout out. Maybe if Ron gets his act together here, maybe I could chase you down someday and have you on the show, because it would be fun to just talk to you about your life and your successes and all the different things that have happened through the years. It'd be really cool. But I'm still reaching out, I'll say it right now, to anyone who might be, let's say, younger and more aware of how these things work as to how to use some sort of a software so I can bring guests into my show. Maybe we'll have that figured out shortly. I've been reaching out to a few different people, so we'll see if somebody comes back and they have to just sit here and walk me through it. That's all. And then we can bring folks like this on, because it's just fascinating to hear things like this. So anyway, that's why I brought up Dave Zabritsky, because I thought it would be really cool to talk about this sort of thing, knowing that there are numbers of people that have issues with concussions. And as I was at my chiropractor and he was working on me most recently, he did say something about, How many times did you fall off your bike? Because I'm having all sorts of neck things and all. That's another story for another time. And it will be yet another saga and bump in the road in Ron's life. And I'll talk about it more in the future because I'm an open book about my health issues. But he said, you know, did you ever get a concussion? I went, I don't think so, you know, but then again, I had another chiropractor they had years ago that said, when did you break your collarbone? And I said, I never broke my collarbone. He goes, Ron, give me your hand. He put it up on my collarbone and he said, you feel that lump? And I went, yeah. And he goes, you broke your collarbone. How can you not know you broke your collarbone? Well, you know, I bounced off the pavement a few times. And I think I know when I might have done it, but I also had some other pretty major injuries that went along with that crash. So it's a good possibility that it all happened then, and I was already nursing a very swollen and sore and bruised arm. So maybe, who knows? You never know. But that's a thing. So there's just, this is a really cool thing, and it's a cool company, and I'm glad to see that Dave has figured this out. And, you know, your brain deserves the best because every moment matters. And of course, also as I get older, I am dealing with a lot of folks that are, I teach a lot of senior fitness classes now, and I'm dealing with not only myself, but others that have cognitive issues. As we get older, you have to constantly be working with your brain to keep it alive and happening and coherent. And so this is kind of fascinating. As I know more, I will tell you more. So I think it's really, really cool. So anyway, you might want to check that out. You can always drop me an email if you can't remember what I just said, or you can listen to the show again, of course, and it'll kind of fill you in. So let's move on to a few other things here. Yeah, boy, we can go through an hour pretty quick, can't we? We're going to get to the Giro because we're day three, actually the fourth day right now. It's a rest day in the Giro. But just before that, I keep getting people that keep asking me the same question, and over again I get that same question. Where the heck is Sepp Kuss? Anyone seen Sepp Kuss? So Sepp Kuss, who is obviously a very, very talented rider from the mountains of Durango and a great rider on the Visma team for many, many years. And he's always been kind of that right-hand man, you know, the guy who will launch an attack to create confusion in the pack so they can get their GC rider up there and do what they do. And then mysteriously one year he made such a heavy launch, they let him go so far he ended up gaining the winning jersey in the Vuelta a España, and the team basically supported him and let him win the Vuelta that year, which was a really cool thing. But Sepp has been kind of, you know, in the shadows since then. I haven't seen a lot from him or heard a lot about him. And so I figured I'm going to find out where the heck Sepp Kuss is. So I looked it up and I found an article here. Sepp Kuss parks his GC ambitions and targets the return to consistency. When results don't meet expectations, it's difficult. The Lisa Bike fan favorite will return to both the Tour de France and the Vuelta a España in 2025. So that's where Sepp Kuss is. He's working on it. So he's getting himself back to fitness, and he's getting himself back to being that tried and true lieutenant that takes care of business when business needs to be taken care of. He's the workhorse. He's great guy. He's the, you know, what was it? George Hincapie was one of those guys. Another one of those guys. Just the freight train. When you need him, he's there. So he won the 2023 Vuelta a España, which I had just mentioned, despite being one of his team's protected GC riders at the start. So he was not being one of his team's protected GC riders at the start. He really struggled with consistency throughout the last season. He missed the Tour de France after contracting COVID. though he won a stage and the GC at the Vuelta, a Burgos, he failed to defend his Vuelta title, finishing 14th and more than 20 minutes adrift of the eventual victor, Primoz Roglic. So that's, he's now working on getting himself back, and he said he was happy to win at least one race, but he can be happy with that. But overall, it was a shame to miss the tour and everything that comes with that. Not every year is a perfect upward trajectory. You have to roll with bad luck and normal setbacks when it happens. As a cyclist, this is a quote from him, you always need a certain level of confidence based on what you've done in the past. Training is one thing, but when the results don't meet your expectations, it's always difficult. And he also says, I think that's normal for any athlete to have a bounce back from that. It was no disaster or anything. I just know it's always hard to be at top level and stay there. So Sepp will be back, and he will be hopefully, you know, charging some serious breakaways and some big mountain climbs. The man has got a set of lungs on him. It's pretty amazing. I'm a big fan of Sepp Kuss, and you can also, he has a Facebook page. You can like him on there, and he's, you know, it's fun because you get to follow and see where he's at. So we'll keep an eye on him and see what's going on, because I really, really like him. I think he's a great rider, and he is truly a great American rider. Of course, we always like to see someone from the States who's doing well. So let's go on to the Giro here as we get towards the end of the show here. So the Giro update, stage one, it was a relatively flat with a few little bumps in it here and there, but it turned into a sprint at the end, and Mads Pedersen and Primoz Roglic are at it, neck and neck the whole way, and they're both really good sprinters, but Mads is definitely a little bit better. He took the first stage. He took the pink jersey the first day, and that was that. And then the next day, they had a time trial, and the time trial was exciting as time trials can be. I'm not a huge time trial fan, but anyway, Joshua Tarling of Ineos Grenadiers won it with Primoz Roglic like a second behind him. Can you believe that? It was really funny because they show, you know, when you're the winner, when you're leading in the time trial, they kind of put you on a pedestal and you sit there and you watch the monitor and you go and you look and you watch and you go, okay, beat that guy. Okay, he just finished. I beat him. Oh, okay, he finished. I beat. And here comes Primoz. And Primoz is on fire, and he's riding one heck of a great time trial. He's the defending champion, and he crossed the line 1 second slower than Joshua Tarling. So Primoz has been second in like three races now in the Giro. He is the defending champion. They are now transporting everything from Albania over to Italy, and the race will resume tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. But it is truly going to be a very interesting race. I think once we get into mountains, Primoz is going to show us a little bit more about what it's like to be a Grand Tour rider, and you know, we'll see what happens as far as that goes. But all of the results, they are very, very, very close to one another. So it's really, where are we at here? It is like 9 seconds difference, I think, in first and second place. Yeah, it's 9 seconds. So 47, that was stage three results were the same. But then if we go to overall results, it's Mads Pedersen, and he's 7 hours, 42 minutes and 10 seconds. Primoz Roglic is 7 hours, 42 minutes and 19 seconds. And Matthias Vajcek is 7:42:24, so he's just a few 5 seconds behind. And Brandon McNulty of the United States, riding for the UAE Team Emirates, is 7:42:31. So it's very tight right now, and we'll see what happens. And the Giro is on. It's exciting. It gets me all excited every day. I get to watch the Giro. Yay! Good bike racing on TV right now, if you have the proper channels of which to watch it. And I think I'm watching it on HBO Max or something like that, I think is what it's on. But we're subscribing for a month just so you can watch the race. That's the way I look at it. But anyway, that's what's going on there. So the Giro is definitely happening, and there is so much more that is going to happen really, really soon. So stage one, stage two, let's see here. Back to Italy for the fourth stage was an opportunity for sprinters again. So stage five is less flat, but it still offers a chance for the tougher fast guys. So it looks like four and five are going to be more sprinting oriented. Stage six is going to take the Pink Caravan to Naples after a challenging opening section, and the last 70 kilometers are mostly flat. Stage seven is a tough climbing stage with a final ascent of 12.6 kilometers that gets brutally steep near the top. And stage eight serves up more of the same. The route is slightly less demanding, but the finish is an uphill, which is not the case for the ninth stage, a Strada Bianchi-ish race with a finish at the Piazza del Campo in Siena, and the iconic ending of the race on the white roads through Tuscany. So brutally steep, finale awaits, plus five Stataris sections in the last 70 kilometers. And that will finish us off for the second week. No, actually, is that right? Yeah, that would be right. So then we got more after that. And as the race develops, from what I've observed, it gets worse and worse and worse as far as level of difficulty, let's say. Amazing last week. The last week is going to be crushing. And this is why I love bike racing. It's so much fun. So really, really fun to watch, and really fun to watch it develop. And let's go on to events. We got some events coming up here. May is National Bike Month by the League of American Bicyclists. As you well know, I've been talking about this for a few weeks now. So find something to do to ride your bike in May. Maybe it's the Ride of Silence. Maybe it's Bike to Work Week. Number of things. Those are all coming up in another week, maybe. Got to look at that just to be sure. Anyway, and then Eurobike is coming up in June 25th through June 29th. Now, Eurobike, why is Eurobike important? Well, it's important because it's the big European bike show. And it's where a lot of companies will show their goods. It's a very cool thing. And that's kind of fun. It's in Frankfurt, Germany this year. So, but locally, we have the Ride of Silence, which is back for 2025, and it is May 21st, 7 p.m. worldwide, and always the third Wednesday in May. And our Ride of Silence, the only one in Connecticut, will be at the Mansfield Community Center and the Mansfield Town Hall with overflow parking over at E.O. Smith High School. And we ask that people show up. I'm telling people, show up at 6:30. We'll have announcements and gather at 6:50 for the announcements. And then we will roll at 7 p.m. And that's a really cool event. And love to see you there. It basically is a remembrance of people who have been hit by a car and made out okay, and or people that have been hit by a car and not survived. So anyway, the Best Buddies Boston to Hyannisport ride, which I am going to unfortunately miss this year, 155 and 20 miles, will have this year's guest will be Mark Cavendish, and that is on May 31st, 2025. Look it up on bestbuddies.com. Finishing points. So what are you doing for Bike Month? The clip from our friends for the League of American Bicycles. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making biking easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier and healthier and our communities are safer and friendlier and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride your bike. And do your part. Hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car for just one day and ride your bike instead. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, Dr. Fran Storch. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bike.